Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of the Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross. This is episode 260. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80 grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going pretty good. We are into 2024. The weather's still really cold, and I really hate that. But I'm ready for warmer weather in baseball and ready for this sinus infection I have to go away. I hope I don't sound stuffy, but...
Now you sound fine.
Okay, that's good, because I've been stuffy since, like, Christmas night. Like, I just woke up in the middle of the night and was stuffy, and I've been stuffy since. It's not fun, but... Yeah, otherwise, it's been good, and... Looking forward to a good 2024. I think it's going to be a really good year for baseball, for the podcast, for our personal growth. I'm really excited.
Likewise, man. Yeah, it's always fun. Like, it's always, the beginning of the year is always full of hope, full of promise. And yeah, I'm very excited. Both in the baseball side of my life and in just my personal life. I'm looking to hopefully buy a new house this year. Going on a cruise with my kids in April for April vacation. I surprised them with that on Christmas morning. So that's a fun thing to look forward to. And yeah, I think it's going to be a really good year. Let's hope it is. Second episode of the year, second episode of the week. If you missed our first episode of the week on Tuesday, we did our third base prospect rankings. That was a lot of fun. And then on Friday, we have our third base dynasty rankings episode with James Anderson. So triple episode week here. We'll probably do, we're obviously back to two per week and maybe even three some weeks. We'll sneak in a third one every now and then as we get closer and closer to opening day, which is a little under 3 months away now. Hard to believe, but also very exciting at the same time. And today's a fun little episode here. Dynasty debates. We've been doing a lot of these on our Twitter, over on the Tool Shed Pod Twitter account, doing almost one per day, pretty close to it. Just a lot of fun guys that are close in dynasty rankings that are good discussion points. We figured we'd debate them ourselves and talk about it here. And we have so many, we'll break them up into two different episodes. We'll do pitchers today and hitters either, I don't know, but next week or upcoming. Within the next couple of weeks, we'll do all the hitters debates in that episode. So let's hop right into it here, Chris. First one, we got Luis Castillo versus George Kirby, the battle of the Seattle ace arms. Both these guys are high in ADP this year. I think Castillo might even be the SP3 in ADP. Kirby not too far behind that. So who are you taking here in Dynasty Leagues? Obviously, Castillo's a bit older, 31 years old. Kirby's younger, 25. Castillo's more proven. Kirby less proven. But the age gap, who are you taking first Dynasty, Castillo or Kirby?
I think it's hard to bet against Kirby's age, but you look at the upside with Castillo and the fact that he gets strikeouts. It's so important. And Kirby has not shown that yet. He has not shown the ability to get strikeouts consistently, even though we know he can. I believe that the arsenal can improve and that can happen. But so far, he's ran below average K rates. Last year, below 23%. So the upside's there. The innings eating is really good. 190.2 innings this year, but only 172 Ks. The ratios, really good on both. Well, Castillo threw 197 innings, but he struck out 220. The ERAs were nearly identical, as I mentioned, 334 to 335 last year. But Kirby, 6 years younger. Kirby, my fear is that he has to command everything so well for it to play up, which he does, but he has to do that consistently. His walk rate was the best in baseball, 2.5%. That is absolutely elite. But in Dynasty, I think we get too caught up in age. We look too far into the future. And I don't want to do that here. And I want to lean Luis Castillo just ever so slightly. Same tier, but give me Castillo, despite being a bit older, because he's just 31. I'm looking 3 years at most in Dynasty, and we've seen arms like Castillo pitch at high levels much past age 34. So from that standpoint, I just want the strikeouts from an ace. You got to have that. So I am taking Luis Castillo in a really close one, but same tier for me.
It's funny. One of the replies to this one when I posted it says something along the lines of, give me the guy that will throw 100 pitches in an outing, taking a shot at Kirby after that comment he made post game. But you look at Kirby was still 15th or tied for 14th, actually, with his teammate Logan Gilbert in innings pitched last year. A guy that was still going over six innings per start, just doing it more efficiently. And that's why he was able to do that, even if he wasn't the guy that went super deep in terms of a pitch count as opposed to some other guys. But tied 14th in innings pitched as a rookie, very good. Got, obviously, 335 ERA. K rate, obviously, was right around league average, slightly a smidge above league average by about half a percentage point. But when compared to Castillo, he was about 4.5 percentage points behind Castillo. Castillo, each of the last 2 years, been a little over 27%, right around 20% came on his BB rate. ERA was 299 last year, 333 in 2023. So very consistent there. Under 3.5 ERA in four of the last 5 years. 2021, it did go up 398, but obviously that's not bad whatsoever. This is very close. So if you look at my overall rankings right now, I have one at 47 and one at 52. They are my SP 8 and 9 right now. Yeah, but I do have Kirby slightly ahead. And these guys even went even higher in our mock draft we did back in November. Castillo went 34 and Kirby 39. So that was for Castillo, that was SP 5, it looks like. And Kirby SP 7. Burns is right in the middle of them at pick 36. And then the other ones ahead of them were Otani, obviously, but then Strider, Cole, and Yuri Perez. And then right behind them, Gallon and G-Rod, who I have ahead of them in my rankings right now. But I do think, 100% agree with what you were saying, Chris. I think the reason why I have Kirby just slightly ahead, yeah, the age factors in, but excuse me, like you were saying, Castillo and all these other guys, good pitchers like this that pitch well into their mid-30s as elite arms. Look, at it took until like recently for Kershaw to start falling off. Now, really not even production-wise. He's still very good production-wise, but Scherzer just started falling off. Verlander's still going strong. So you see a lot of these guys pitch well into their mid, even into their late 30s. So 30, I think 31 for pitchers isn't really, excuse me, I got a bubble in my throat. Yeah, it doesn't really feel like, he doesn't feel like a 31-year-old guy. Like, probably feels more like a 28-year-old hitter or something like that. But I do believe that there is more strikeout upside with Kirby. He's got the stuff. Like, the fastball average is 96, sinker right below 96 miles an hour, mid-80s slider, low-80s curve. He's in three different velocity bands there, mixes in a splitter and a changeup as well. Combined on those, about 8%. Curveball, 11%, slider right around 20, sinker 21.5, four-seamer 39.5. But I don't know what might keep coughing here. But I think there is a bit more strikeout upside. Is he going to get up to 28, 29%? No, probably not. But could he get to be like a 25, 26% guy? I think so. I think that's why I'm valuing him a little bit higher here than Luis Castillo. But again, they're basically back-to-back in my own rankings. Next one here, another battle of ace-type guys. Aaron Nola versus Tyler Glasnow. Obviously, Nola, more of the safer option. Glasnow, the high upside guy, but more risk. Where do you go here? Nola versus Glasnow, Chris.
This one's tough. I like the upside of Glasnow and the safety of Nola. Nola's been about as safe as they come among pitchers. He's as durable as they are. And I have to pull up the stat, but I think it's been since 2017 that he missed a start due to injury. It's just wild to see. You look at the innings year over year. And 2018, starting 212, 202, the shortened pandemic year, full season, 71 innings, but 180, 205, 193. Like, Nola has not missed a start, and hopefully that doesn't jinx him, but very safe profile. Glasnow, on the other hand, has only thrown more than 100 innings once since 2018. He threw 120 in 2023, plus some playoff innings. That is notable, but the track record of health has not been good. There's been videos surfacing talking about that he's pretty much had the same injury over that span. But still, I need to see more out of Glasnow. The Dodgers notoriously baby arms, especially arm like Glasnow. I could see him being used in five-inning stints consistently and not racking up innings. But the upside is much greater with Tyler Glasnow. The age difference is pretty negligible here. 30 and 30 for both are 2 months apart. Both guys entering their prime. Part of me wants to lean Glasnow just for the upside. And I think I do, but it is pretty close. I think Nola's reliability is huge. But if I'm playing a game of upside and risk, I will take on Tyler Glasnow.
Yeah, it really just depends on like how risk adverse are you with your team. And I think a lot of it depends on what the rest of your staff looks like. If you have another few good arms that you can afford to have more of a upside guy, then you go with Glasnow. But if you don't really have those other guys, like let's say you had already had like a Cole and also like a Gallon or something like that, or even a Cole and like a Framber Valdez, just two safer arms up there to kind of help lead your staff as well, then I could see having going for a Glasnow as opposed to a Nola. I do lean Glasnow. Again, these are guys that are very close to my own rankings too, ever so slightly. And you look at in the mock we did, Glasnow went 50 and Nola 77. A little bit of an advantage there for Glasnow. I don't feel good about it though, Chris. I think if you guaranteed me the same amount of innings or even within, I'd say 20 to 25, even if Glasnow was Nola at 180 and Glasnow at like 150 to 160, I'd still go Glasnow. But he's never even pitched that many innings. We're still looking for that first year. Actually, this year was his best year, 120 innings, but still only 21 starts. That 21 starts represents the most of his career. Yep. The other time he was over 100 back in 2018 between Tampa Bay and Pittsburgh, he made 45 appearances, 34 out of the pen in Pittsburgh, and then 11 out of the rotation for Tampa Bay. But can we even trust him for 140? I don't know that we can. He's a guy that I've always harped on and was off on for the longest time for durability concerns, the higher walk rate, which he's improved over the last couple of years. That's been encouraging. Added the slider, which is a very good slider. So he's not really a two-pitch guy for the most part anymore. But we still can't count on him. I'm just hoping that maybe this year is the year we can get 140 innings out of him. So I do lean Glasnow here just because the upside is a decent amount higher than Nola. But Nola is absolutely safer. Just Nola's the guy that every other year, you know, the fact that he's had 2 years out of the last three where the ERA has been right around 4.5. Just, though, 180 innings each of the last 3 years, and each of the last five full seasons when you take out the 2020 year. The lowest amount he's thrown over the last five full seasons was 180 and two-thirds back in 2021. So absolutely safer. I do lean Glasnow here, but that's one where I don't feel great about that. Let's just say that. Next one here, which is one of the ones that gotten the most engagement, which is a really fun one here. We got Yoshinobu Yamamoto versus Tarik Skubal. Probably two of the, maybe the two buzziest pitching names right now in the fantasy world. Obviously, Skubal had the phenomenal end to the season last year, and Yamamoto, obviously the big name coming over. I mean, Skubal was like a top three pitcher to end the season. You know, after he debuted in, where was it? I think he debuted actually on the 4th of July here. He posted an ERA well under three. I'm trying to pull up Savant here. Savant's having a lot of issues right now. Let me go over to BREF here for the stats here. He made 15 starts. I remember that. 15 starts, 280 ERA, 0.90 whip, and 102 strikeouts to only 14 walks in those 80 and a third innings. Track record hasn't really been there. He's only made, he's never made 150 innings in a season. 149 and a third was his most back in 2021. And how will Yamamoto translate? Obviously, he might be the best pitcher ever to come out of Japan so far. Roki Sasaki might lay claim to that next year or the year after. But Yamamoto is already being considered a top 10 dynasty arm. And I think Skubal is in that discussion as well. So a lot of variables here, Chris. Do you lean Skubal or you lean Yamamoto right now?
I lean Yamamoto just because he's been so steady and consistent while in Japan, but still, I just don't trust Skubal's track record enough. And while you look, you're like, okay, like everything's really good under the hood. Like it's hard to poke holes, especially like the velocity ticked up significantly. If that sticks, like that's huge. The fastball is up 96 consistently after being 94 in 2022. I like Skubal, and I do buy to an extent, but I also think Yoshinobu Yamamoto is just insanely, insanely good with the stuff that he brings to the table. He's also got a fastball at 96. It's a low release height. It has a ton of IVB up in the zone. Like it has the rising effect because of the low release height and hammering the top of the zone. Hitters really struggle with that pitch. Does get a little arm side run. His splitter is absolutely nasty. Sits around 90 miles an hour. Splitters we know can be inconsistent pitches because of the grip. They're really hard to grip, but a ton of swing and miss on that. A ton of chase out of the zone. It gets just a nasty movement profile. Like Senga's ghost fork is like a lot of vertical drop. But when you watch Yamamoto's splitter, it has a lot of downward, like vertical and horizontal movement. It, when it doesn't miss bats, it's keeping the ball on the ground. The curveball, really good pitch too. High spin rates, throws it for strikes often. He's got a cutter, he's got a sweeper. Overall, I just trust Yamamoto a little more. And while we never know what it's going to be like to translate to the majors, because there's things outside of baseball that you have to adjust to, I do believe that it could be a really big year in career for Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who ultimately got a massive contract and a team for a team that is already ready to contend. And I love the fit in LA. He's going to get a lot of wins. He's going to be really valuable for fantasy purposes.
Absolutely, yeah. I was going into the offseason. I know Skuball was the big name. It was getting talked about a lot, and you saw some other analysts, very knowledgeable analysts, that are putting him as top 10 starter for 2024. And I started out trying just to throw some cold water on that. I couldn't do it. I really couldn't. Like, outside of the, like I said earlier, the kind of durability and limited track record, like as a performance and stats wise, I couldn't do it. Like, you look at his Savant page, it's just littered with red. He was in the top, let's see, the top 6% of pitchers in XERA, XBA, chase rate, K rate, walk rate, barrel rate, and then it was 85th percentile in whiff rate and 87th percentile, excuse me, in ground ball rate. So, like, everything that you want from an ace, guy that can miss bats, guy that can get ground balls, a guy that can limit walks as well, he does. It, looking at just Skuball right now, I think he absolutely is in that fantasy ace discussion here. And I posted this tweet a few days ago. For pitchers since 1990 to have a 30-plus percent K rate and a sub-5% walk rate in a season, which they pitched at least 80 innings, Skuball joined some really elite company this year. Here are the names that have done that over the last, since 1990. Scherzer three times, Kershaw three times, Verlander twice, Pedro Martinez twice. Those are the only ones that have done it multiple times. And then the individual guys on here, Skuball this past year, DeGrom in 2021, Bieber in 2019, Corey Kluber 2017, Chris Sale 2015, Randy Johnson 2004, Curt Schilling 2002, and Dennis Eckersley in 1992. So it's a very elite list to be on. And I think he absolutely is an ace, but so is Yamamoto. He does all of the same things that I just mentioned. He's a guy that misses bats, doesn't walk a ton of guys, and the stuff is really good. I love the landing spot. I agree with you, Chris, there. So all in all, I lean ever so slightly to Yamamoto, but they're five spots apart in my overall. They're both right in that top 10-ish range, right behind Kirby and Castillo right now in that similar tier. I think it's a pretty big tier, like tier three of dynasty pitchers right now, and maybe even guys that could get up in the tier two. So I do lean Yamamoto as well. The next one here is our really only prospect battle. This one, I'll probably end up throwing more pitching prospect debates out on the Twitter in the upcoming weeks, but we got Paul Skeens versus Cade Horton right now, Chris. Two guys, both National League Central pitching prospects, two guys that are definitely both tier one pitching prospects right now. And I think some people, I think the general public leans Paul Skeens here, but that's also because I think the perceived value of Horton hasn't fully gotten to where it should be. So who do you lean here, Skeens or Horton, long-term in dynasty?
It's really close. I am inclined to say Cade Horton. I have them in the same tier, all in pretty much tier one. I'm not one of those that has Skeens like ahead, like in his own tier for pitching prospects. I have a five-person tier of pitching prospects that are all tier one. I'm inclined to say Horton, with the strides that he made, that's pretty impressive. Now, Skeens, I'm curious to see, what does he look like not being under Wes Johnson at LSU every single day? Wes Johnson is an absolute wizard with pitchers. He worked wonders with Paul Skeens. Skeens was not the pitcher in 2023 that he was in 2022. He was spectacular. Horton also is still pretty raw himself. Horton was a two-sport athlete. He was a shortstop at Oklahoma. He had Tommy John surgery. He didn't fully become a pitcher until his draft year. He was good enough where the Cubs took him seventh overall. Horton's stuff has gotten better and better throughout the year. The Cubs worked really hard on his development. And Horton's got the stuff that I believe that could lead him to be that top pitching prospect in the game. I really do believe that. And I don't believe that Skeens is just well ahead of him. Horton's got the big fastball already. He's consistently 95, 98, 99. He's got a high IVB, throws it for strikes. Hitters can't catch up with it. He's got the big slider. The slider is probably his best pitch. Ton of sweeping action. Averaged like 12, 13 inches of sweep this year. It's late break. It's hard break. That pitch is really good. He developed a curveball this year. Really worked hard on that. Similar velo band to the slider or the sweeper, but it does have a lot of vertical movement with it. The changeup was new this year. Split finger grip. He was looking really good with that split change. I didn't get to see it. He didn't throw it when he was at Myrtle Beach, and I did see him. But ultimately, Horton, I think, just might be one of the best pitching prospects in baseball. He is one of the best. He might be the best. And I love Paul Skeens. I love what Skeens brings to the table, but Horton's pretty unique, and I lean there.
He absolutely is. And the discussion of who is the top pitching prospect in baseball right now is a fun one. You're not including Yamamoto, because he'd be, I think, the unquestioned number one if I was ranking him in prospect ranking, which I'm not. So take him out of the equation. It's really one of really four names right now. I love Robbie Snelling. I don't think he's quite there. Maybe even five. If you want to throw Painter back in that mix now that he's had the surgery, and hopefully he'll be back at some point in 2024. You can throw him back in the mix, but you got Job. Job's my number one right now, but then Skeens is right there. Horton's right there. Tiedemann and Painter, I think, could be in that mix as well. Snelling lurking slightly back of these guys by about 10, 15 spots in my overall. But, man, this is really tough.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I don't, they're back, literally they're back to back in my prospect rankings right now, 23 and 24. So I do have Skeens 23 and Horton 24 for what it's worth, but I do feel slightly safer about Horton. I think there's a slightly higher floor there than with Skeens. But then I could say the same thing. I think there's slightly higher upside with Skeens than there is with Horton. They've gotten better recently, but are you not shying away from him, but are you a little concerned about Skeens being in Pittsburgh? They don't have the greatest track record. Again, recently they've gotten better over the last year or so, but does the org play into either of your thought processes here with Skeens versus Horton, Chris?
No, Pittsburgh actually has really good pitching development in the minors. And so you look at the track record and it's okay, like it's not been good, but their pitch development and the guys in place and the system they have in place are really good.
Yeah.
They've got some of the best stuff. They've developed Bubba Chandler very well. They've developed Anthony Salameto very well. Thomas Harrington's another one. There's quite a few. And across the board, their arms are really good. So that doesn't worry me at all. I think that Pittsburgh gets a bad rap, and for good reasons. It's the last time they've had a winning season. They haven't been to playoffs since, what, like 2015, if I'm not mistaken? Yeah, they get a bad rap. It's for a good reason, but I think things are going really well in Pittsburgh from a developmental standpoint, especially at the minor league levels. I'm not overly worried about that development process because Skeens is going to work with some really good dudes.
Yeah, that's right. They definitely have gotten better over the last couple of years for sure. So again, I lean slightly to Skeens. You lean slightly to Horton, but I think it's basically a coin. That might be the biggest coin flip of any debate here we have today. Back to the major league level, two guys that were rookies in 2023 who had pretty different seasons. I think you look at these two guys before 2023 and it was a clear cut one to one side here. But now I think it might have shifted because this guy, Tanner Bibee, had a lot better year than Hunter Brown. In 25 starts for Bibee, 298 ERA and 142 innings, had a 1.18 whip, 7.7% walk rate, and a 24.1% strikeout rate. Hunter Brown was very up and down overall. finished in 155 and two-thirds innings. ERA ticked up over 5 to 5.09. Had a 136 whip, 8.3% walk rate, and a 26.8% K rate. Now, the xERA was nearly a full run lower, but it was very inconsistent start to start from Brown. He threw a really good one, then throw a clunker. So pretty frustrating to roster him overall. With this one, this is another tough one for me. And again, these guys are all both close to my rankings as well. I do lean right now slightly to Tanner Bibee. I have him 120. Overall, I have Brown 127. I think it's similar to other discussions here where I think there's a higher floor for one, and that'd be Bibee. I think there's a higher upside for Hunter Brown. I think Hunter Brown has the higher strikeout upside, and he's already a couple percentage points above, and I think that could only get better. He's at the two breaking balls that he can miss bats with the curveball and the slider to go along with that fastball that's close to 96 miles an hour. So I think that the higher upside is there than with Bibee, but Bibee's just so rock solid across the board. Four-pitch mix, four-seamer slider, changeup, and curveball. You know, changeup was really good this past year, 37.8% whiff rate, 213 batting average against, 298 slug. Slider was good as well. The curveball was probably the worst pitch for him metrics-wise, but it was also the least used pitch that he threw, only 9% of the time. So we're looking at 91% between four-seam slider and changeup, but those were all pretty solid pitches for him, all of which had a slug allowed under 360. So I think he's the safer arm here. So I lean towards Bibee, Chris, but I could see Brown jumping ahead of him if he could correct some of the issues with the fastball that he had 271 batting average against in the fastball, and the slider didn't really perform well, even though he missed bats. Actually, no, the slider only had a 20.8% whiff rate, but this was a better pitch for him in the minor league. So if he can get that slider back to where it was, I could see Brown jumping ahead. I do believe he has a higher upside, but right now I lean Bibee because I think he's a bit safer.
Yeah, I like Tanner Bibee a lot, and it's not a newfound love. Like, I was really into him as a prospect too. The stuff's really good, and Brown stuff's even better. There's no denying that. Brown stuff is could lead him to be like a high-end SP2, but Bibee has such better command of all of his pitches, control of all of his pitches. You just look at the profile, and you know, he throws a mid-90s fastball. It gets up to 98, 99. He misses bats, but when he's not missing bats, he's keeping it on the ground, which is pretty substantial. Slider, really solid pitch as well, 32% whiff rate. Changeup had a 38% whiff rate. So those are both really solid pitches. He throws the changeup to both handed batters, which is interesting. A lot of righties just throw them to left-handed batters, but with Bibee, the profile to me is just okay. This is safe. It feels very Zach Gallen-esque when he was first coming up, and it's kind of pitcher he could be. Bibee's still young. Bibee's got good control. He's got good stuff. Maybe not the strikeout upside that we see in a Hunter Brown type, but can't knock him for that. The K rate, well above George Kirby last year. We talk about Kirby being a high-end arms. Bibee certainly has stuff to compete, so I go that way as well.
Yeah, no, that's totally fair. And I think Bibee's maybe closer to George Kirby than we think. I think Kirby, again, does have the upside to get the K rate up a bit higher, but yeah, I think Bibee's still a very good dynasty target. I think he's a very fair value right now. I think the perceived value is caught up to where it should be yet. So, yeah, great target there. So, yeah, I think we both lean Bibee here, but with potential there for Brown to jump ahead. We'll see. I think Brown's a good buy low in general. I think Bibee's a good buy. It's a good value buy. I think Brown's a good buy low right now in dynasty leagues. Let's go over to the AL Central now for this next debate. We got Dylan Cease versus Cole Reagans. A battle of the mustaches here. This is a fun one, Chris, because obviously Cease was a guy that was considered maybe a top five fantasy. I saw people rank him as top five pitcher entering this past season after what he did last year, where he had a 220 ERA and 227 strikeouts, 184 innings. But this year, ERA more than doubled to 458. Obviously still had the high K rate. That did tick down. below 30% down to 27.3%. But Cole Reagans, this would have even been a debate as of July or August even, but Reagans was the hot name to end the season. Once he went over from Texas to Kansas City in 12 starts, 264 ERA, 89 strikeouts to 27 walks in 71 and two-thirds innings for 107 whip. So right now, even when Cease was before the year, I was never as high as most on Cease. I think he's too erratic. And the walk rate has been sitting right around that 10%, which isn't terrible given his stuff. But at the same time, it causes more blowups than you'd like to see. The curveball was just getting demolished this past year. We have 300 batting average against on the curve. Slug over 500. Wasn't getting whiffs on it. Was still getting whiffs on the slider, but that was really his only go-to kind of whiff rate offering there at 43.3%. Fastball was fine, not great. But I think it was just curveball regressed a good amount. Doesn't really have a changeup that he can trust more than using it 3% of the time. Guy gives up way too much hard contact as well. That jumped over 10% from the previous year up to 41.6%. EV jumped over 3 miles an hour. And I'm a believer in Reagans, and maybe not to the level he showed, but there was a lot of good in Reagans. He improved the walk rate. He gets ground balls at a solid clip near 45%. A lot of good comes out of Cole Reagans. So I do lean Reagans here. That might feel crazy given the fact that this wouldn't even been in discussion at the All-Star break last year, but give me Reagans right now, Chris. Which way do you go?
Yeah, I'm going Reagans too, but I do think it depends on where Cease lands. Things are just a disaster in Chicago for the White Sox. That is the development. There was things internally that people were fighting, like how they would use Dylan Cease, like these other arms. It's just, it got really ugly. And so that system, that org, not good. Maybe he's not traded at this point. I don't know. I'm shocked that he hasn't been yet. I thought he would be. But we know Cease long has issues with control, with walks. That's always been a big part of his game. And volatility at that. Such a volatile pitcher. But the interesting thing is, Dylan Cease actually had a lower walk rate than Cole Reagans did last year. I'm curious now to actually filter that later in the season when Reagan's traded, fully a starter, breaking out. I am curious. But for the season, Cease did have a lower walk rate, which is bizarre to look at and see. But I'm going to filter this real quick, like looking at from the time that he was traded to KC and just see what the numbers look like. I know they were really good across the board. Yeah, 2.64 ERA and 71. In two-thirds innings with Kansas City, and the walk rate was below 10%, so that is solid. The K-minus BB of near 22%, very low batting average against, 194. I think Reagans just might be somebody to invest in. Cease feels like a fade, Reagans feels like an invest, so I am definitely in on Reagans, and for here, I'll take him for this battle.
All right, we both went Cole Reagans. I wasn't thinking that we both would, but yeah, I think there's a lot of legitimacy in what he did down the stretch, and it's surprising. People usually get better when they go to KC. It's usually the other way around, but yeah, I like a lot of what he did, and I'm still sketchy on Dylan Cease. I do agree, though, if Cease gets out of the White Sox org, maybe. We'll see where he lands. If he gets to a good pitching development org, maybe my tune will change a little bit, but I do think he has the higher upside. I think you can say that about Dylan Cease, though. I do think it's fairly close, but we've seen some of the upside with Dylan Cease in the past, and maybe he's a nice bounce back year coming for him, but we'll see. Next one here, go over to the National League Central from the same team. A couple of teammates here, Hunter Greene versus Nick Lodolo. Very different arms. We look at the way they operate, the arsenal they have. Both have had some success, but inconsistently throughout their major league careers so far. So, Chris, who you got here between the Cincinnati Reds arms, Hunter Greene or Nick Lodolo?
This is tough. Both have shown to be injury prone. Both have shown other issues. They pitch in Great American Small Park, too. It's a terrible place, but that does put them on even playing fields for me. Hunter Greene, probably has better stuff, just pure stuff. But I'm going with Nick Lodolo here because I feel like he's just a much safer bet. He misses bats. He throws a lot of strikes. He keeps the ball on the ground at a high rate. And you have to keep the ball on the ground at Great American Ballpark. So that's essential. His four seam, just really good movement profile on it. Sinker, 20 inches of horizontal movement. That's huge. The curveball, having a ton of sweep. He's got a ton of east-west movement while also showing pretty solid numbers on the vertical side too. So for me, it's Nick Lodolo, but Hunter Green has more upside, but I feel Lodolo is just a much safer bet here.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that as well. I do lean to Lodolo too. Green, he's a two-pitch guy. He hasn't developed that changeup really whatsoever. 5.3% usage rate on that this past year, which is the exact same as it was the previous year, and doesn't use it really at all against used it a little more against righties this past year than they did in 2022, but still not a lot. So he's really a two-pitch guy. And yeah, the slider is really good, and I think he's shown that so far. Whiff rate's been right around 40% on that pitch each of the last 2 years, but just gets hit too hard on with the four-seam. And even though he throws, averages 98.3, it just shows that velocity isn't everything. Yeah, it's obviously better to have, you know, rather have a guy throw 98 than 91, but at the same time, you got to be able to locate it. You got to have the movement profile on it, and he just hasn't been effective with that four-seamer yet. Slug has been over 500 for each of the first 2 years. Woba in the 375, 380 range. Batting average against been 261, 265. So is this what he is? I think a guy that can get you a good K rate. He's been over 30% both years. That's great, but just gets hit too hard. Barrel rate over 9%, hard hit rate over 40% allowed. And I think Lodolo, which is hurt, obviously, seven starts. He was hurt, only 34 and a third innings. Doesn't wow you as much as Green does, but I think I like the mix more. He's more of a four pitch guy, four seam sinker, curveball, changeup. Curveball is a very good curveball. And got a little bit unlucky with that. Gave up four home runs on that pitch last year, which made the batting average and slug go up. He missed spots a little bit with that. But overall, look at the XBA and the X-Slug compared to the batting average and slug. Much lower on those ones and still had a 45% whiff rate. He's been above 45% whiff rate each of the first 2 years with that pitch. And he's a guy that can get ground balls to 47% ground ball rate last year, 45.5% the year before that, which is obviously key for having success in a park like this. So I will go Lodolo as well. Doesn't have quite the upside of Green, but I think the floor is higher. As long as he can stay healthy, that's the issue with both these guys, especially with Lodolo right now. But I like Lodolo a little bit more than I like Hunter Green. Next one here, we got two more. This one, another battle of rookie arms from 2023. We got Gavin Williams versus Bobby Miller. Both guys that were considered top five pitching prospects at some point in their minor league career. Both obviously have the upside to maybe even be aces in for fantasy baseball. And look at what they did last year. Gavin Williams in 16 starts, 82 innings, 3.29 ERA, had a 1.26 whip, 10.5% walk rate, 23.5% K rate. Bobby Miller in 22 starts, 3.76 ERA, that's 124 and a third innings, 1.10 whip, 6.3% walk rate, and a 23.6% strikeout rate. Both, Chris, obviously both have great stuff here. Both are in great orgs. So which one do you go with here, Bobby Miller or Gavin Williams?
It's Bobby for me, but it's really close. Miller just has, and they both have really good stuff, so don't get me wrong here. I like both guys. They're actually ranked pretty similarly, but Bobby Miller stuff is extremely good. Look at the fastball. He sits 99 consistently. It's just absolutely insane pitch. Really good ride up in the zone. The slider gets sweeping action, plus it has, you know, a two-plane break you want to see. The sweeper actually averaged like 14 inches of sweep, which is pretty nasty. Changeup has a ton of fade. So he's getting east-west and north-south, like really good movement in the profile, and he can just blow hitters away. Strikeout numbers were like fine this year, But there's major potential to see that tick up just based on what we see in the past. The command showed really good, much better than it had in the past too. And so while it's close, I think that Bobby Miller just has a little bit more upside and ceiling where he could end up being a high-end SP2, maybe even SP1 territory if all clicks right.
Yeah, so if you asked me this a month ago, I would have said Gavin Williams. It would have been close, but I would have said Gavin Williams. And I've been always been very high about these guys, really, and leaned that way. But after I posted this one on Twitter, I looked into this a bit more, and now I do lean towards Bobby Miller. I think both can be top 15 pitchers in this game, and I think both could be that type of arm this year. I think they showed enough, and they have the upside and the stuff to be that type of guy. And this is obviously not everything, but look at the similar pitchers to each of these guys on Savant based on velo and movement. We'll start with Gavin Williams. These aren't bad names. You got Tyler McGill, Luis Medina, Michael Kopech, AJ Smith-Shawver, and Michael Grove. But look at Bobby Miller. And again, this is not everything, but it's really eye-opening here. Bobby Miller, Gerrit Cole, Jacob deGrom, Hunter Green, Luis Severino, Spencer Strider. So that's which set of five names you'd rather have in Dynasty Leagues. But Miller is just so damn good. The arsenal is very diverse, really a five-pitch arsenal that he really uses to both sides of the plate. I love that. Four-seamer obviously uses both sides, sinker to both sides, curveball to both sides, slider more so the righties and lefties, but he still throws it to lefties, and then the changeup basically inverse of that, more to lefties and righties, but he still uses it against righties. Love to see that. Can miss bats consistently with all of his off-speed pitches, and I think the command is and control is better than with Gavin Williams, so I think there's a slight edge here for both floor and upside to Miller. So again, this is a recent flip-flop in my rankings. I do have Bob Miller ahead now, and I think they're both very great targets for Dynasty Leagues, and both could be aces for a long time. But I think Miller has that slight edge, again, in both floor and upside. Last one here, Chris. This is a this is an interesting one to end it out with, and this is one of the more recent ones that I posted to Twitter here, and that is Walker Buehler versus Shane Boz, a battle of elite arm talents that are both coming off major injury. Obviously, Buehler is more proven than Boz. Obviously, has already done it before. Boz, very limited time in the major leagues. So if you were to look to invest in one of these two, Chris, between Walker Buehler and Shane Boz right now in Dynasty Leagues, which one would you rather hit your wagon to?
Oh, me. Two TJs for Buehler. Declining fastball before. I think I'm going Boz here.
Yep,
Boz has the upside where we saw the elite stuff. And as I'm trying to pull up his Savant page, there's a bad gateway error code 502s.
Yeah. That's so great. Savant's been struggling all night. It's been tough.
Yeah, but Boz showed the improved command, which is huge. He had to do that. He showed elite stuff like big fastball with ride, big slider, like the sliders in the upper 80s, like touches 90, like really solid. The changeup, want to see him throw it more often, but yeah, it's a really good profile in arsenal. We don't know what he's going to look like coming back. He's going to be babied in 2023 or 2024 now, excuse me, sorry. But I'm more comfortable saying Boz than Buehler at this point.
Yeah, I'm Boz as well. And Buehler, like you mentioned, two Tommy Johns. We don't have as big of a track record of these guys as we do the one TJ guys. I think the best one, I was looking at this back when I was writing an article about Otani for RotoBaller, and I think the most productive name so far of the two Tommy John guys, I think it was Nathan Eovaldi. And we had DeGrom's coming off a second one, so we'll get more Buehler. We'll see how he looks, but I don't feel great about Buehler. He's a trendy name right now because he's finally back. Yay. And I'm glad he's back too. He's a fun arm, but you mentioned it wasn't like he was dominant before. He was dominant in 2021, but beginning of 2022, it was like you mentioned, some declining skills, especially with the fastball. and the bat missing ability in general. He was a below average K rate guy the first 12 starts of 2022 before getting injured. So Boz is legit. Like, he is 100% legit. Like, I am fully buying into what we saw in 2021. And for people that forget just how good he was, this is 2021 between him and Grayson Rodriguez, who I currently have as a top five dynasty arm, my number five dynasty arm right now. In 103 innings for G-Rod, 2.36 ERA, 0.83 whip, and a 33.7% K minus walk rate. For Boz, 78 and two-thirds innings, 2.06 ERA, 0.80 whip, and a 33.6% K minus walk rate. So I think people forget just how good Shane Boz is. Like, he has top 10 pitcher upside. Obviously, there's a lot of risk there with the injury history, what he's coming off of now, but I believe in the improvements he made in terms of command and control in that 2021 season. And I think he's still a ace in the making. And I think those ace days are behind Buehler. So while I still think Buehler can have some value, I would rather take a shot on the younger guy and the guy that could still be on the rise as opposed to Buehler. I think, again, best days are behind him. But I think this will wrap us up, Chris. That was a lot of fun debates here. We got a lot of hitting ones we'll get to again in a couple of weeks. Obviously, give us a follow on Twitter if you're not already, at EricCross04, at RotoClegg, at ToolshedPod, and follow all of our individual work at thedynastydugout.com and ToolshedFantasy.com. All of our rankings are over on those two platforms, so check those out. And we'll be back in a few days with our Dynasty Third Base Rankings episode with James Anderson. But until then, everyone take care.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.